After that, it was about a year of waking up at 4 a.m. so that I could go down into my basement and code, and that energized me, and you feel like, oh, you're doing more of the thing that's burning you out. Like, it makes no sense. Why should that help you? But I just find that if you're doing it in the context of something that maybe you care a little bit more about, not that we don't, enjoy our work, but sometimes we get tasks or projects that aren't necessarily enthralling, especially when you're working in financial services and health insurance. So, doing something that you want to do, something that, you can kind of call your own is really beneficial.
Welcome back to Tech Life, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everybody, to the Tech Less podcast. I'm April Rest, your host, and today we're with our special guest, Alec Dorner. Alec is the creator of Flow Analyzer, an AppExchange product that scans flows for violations of best practices. Can't wait to hear more about that one. He's also the founder of Force for Change, a 100% pro bono consulting firm on a mission to help nonprofits free up time and capital by leveraging the power of Salesforce. He's also a Salesforce technical architect at Synagenix. And lastly, but certainly not least, I don't think, is a very proud husband and father of a 1.5-year-old. And you've got a new baby boy on the way. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, definitely not least. That's
Yeah.
the most rewarding and the most difficult job of the list.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm always curious, like everyone we've had on the show so far who has kids, that's like the last thing they put. But I'm like, isn't this probably the most important thing going on in your life? But I don't know.
Yes,
Who am I
it
to
absolutely
say?
is.
So, Alec, tell us how you got into the Salesforce ecosystem. What's your journey been so far?
Yeah, so I, like a lot of people in the Salesforce ecosystem, don't have a computer science background per se. My academic background is in economics, and I started working for a financial services firm out of college, working in operations. And there was just a lot of like monotonous work that I didn't really enjoy doing. So I had learned some Python programming when I was in my master's for like statistical modeling and things like that. And I started to dive a little bit more into that about how can I use that to automate some of the work that I didn't want to do. So, I think that the term that's coined was shadow IT. And yeah, I think word just kind of got around to the IT group. And I sat down, had a conversation with the manager of the Salesforce platform at that company, and he turned me on to Trailhead, and I mean, I just ate it up. I think I did like 20 modules in the first week. Like, I was just obsessed, and I don't know if he was tracking me on Trail Tracker or if, he just kind of got the sense that I was just picking things up, and eventually he was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna figure out a way to get you onto our team. So yeah, I started as a, I love this term. I don't even know where I heard it, but I started as a flow grammar. So instead of a programmer, I was, mostly working with flows, but picked up Apex, Lightning Web Components, and all that, and yeah, just started, diving into the development side.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Kudos to you for like taking a situation where you were less than thrilled and finding a way, like, number one, make it easier for yourself, better for the business, and then ultimately that led you to work that really fuels you, and it sounds like you're also really skilled at.
Yeah, it was always funny because when I was in that operations role, I had applied to a bunch of other companies because it was just like I said, it was a lot of monotonous work, a lot of paperwork and stuff like that that I just didn't really enjoy. And I think I got to like the final two candidates in one of the roles and didn't get it. And I sometimes kind of think back and I'm like, what would have happened if I would have gotten one of those jobs? Because I just don't know if my path would have kind of been anywhere remotely near the Salesforce ecosystem then. And it's obviously worked out very well for me, so I feel very fortunate and lucky that that was the case, that I didn't get the jobs that I was applying for.
I feel like so many people could benefit from just thinking that for a, like reflecting on that for a second, whether we're in a job we like or maybe we're not. Because I remember when I was first applying to jobs after school, feeling so discouraged. And ultimately, I randomly fell into Salesforce, like probably 90% of the people we know. So, yeah, that's like, that's it's really fun to think about, like what would I actually be doing, and would I be nearly as like satisfied doing it now? But that's probably for another day.
Yeah, because I mean, at the time, it is just brutal,
It is
as you said,
brutal.
it's so discouraging.
Yeah.
And then you sit here now and think back and you're like, I just don't know if I would even be as, anywhere near as fulfilled or happy as I am with my career today. So, I guess in that way, things happen for a reason, or maybe don't happen for a reason. And yeah, just works
Yeah.
out.
I'm definitely a believer of like the thought of, if one door closes, another door opens. Like I do strongly believe like if something's not aligned for me, like it's not for me, that it's either going to guide me to a more aligned opportunity, or I don't know. I'm a glass half full kind of a gal, so for good, like good, bad, or ugly. So Alec, I was checking out your LinkedIn and I saw one of your posts about how like the same thing that can drain you can also fill your cup, and I like this, what is it, like oxymoron? I like this contrarian thinking because it makes me stop and pause. And I'd love to hear, like, how did you land on that? What was the story behind that? And like, how might a listener take that, to maybe help in their current work-life integration situation?
Yeah, and I do want to just call out that that segue, is why you've got the best podcast in the business, talking about glass half full, segueing into this conversation. It was that was beautiful right there. That people should take notes if they want to create a
Oh
podcast.
my gosh. I'm blushing. People can't see me. Aw, thank you. I'll take the compliment. Thank you.
But yeah, so kind of the general thinking, and I'm not saying that this is not correct. It's just I think that there's other ways to approach it, but the general way that people kind of approach burnout, or tell you how to like mitigate burnout, is going to be just step away. And a lot of people on this podcast talk about it, and I agree with that. Because sometimes that's just what you have to do, and I do it as well. But another thing that I kind of found was that if you really enjoy what you do, like the action of what you do, like I customizing Salesforce platform for me is like a really enjoyable thing. Just changing the context in which you're doing that can help fill the cup back up. So you're approaching burnout because you're doing Salesforce development tasks, that maybe the task itself isn't fulfilling, or the reason why you're doing it isn't fulfilling. Whereas if you change the context in which you're doing that exact same thing, it can kind of re-energize you. So I've had a couple of instances of that in my career. The first was Force for Change, which, as you mentioned at the top, was we do work pro bono for nonprofit organizations. And I at that time, I was, working when I founded that, I was working at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I was feeling myself getting burned out because it's just a huge organization. They had, I think, over 10 Salesforce orgs,
Oh my
20,000 plus
gosh.
users, and it was just like a constant, kind of grind. And I found that when I finally was able to start working with nonprofits, at first it didn't work out too well. They apparently cold emailing a nonprofit and saying, "Hey, do you have Salesforce? I can help you." Isn't a good strategy. But eventually, when I was able to start working with nonprofits and doing kind of pro bono consulting for them, that really felt like, okay, this is re-energizing me. Like, this is making me, not necessarily that I didn't care, but this is making me care again more. About kind of the work that I'm doing. And so I continue doing it. And the second kind of instance of this in my career is the flow analyzer. So while I was working at Blue Cross Blue Shield again, we were, looking at doing a process builder to flow migration, or maybe it was workflow rules to flows at that time. It's hard to remember what technology Salesforce is deprecating when. But, we had created, probably 50 flows that were replacing a ton of workflow rules in one of the orgs. And, my job as, one of the architects was to kind of do a tech review of everything. And I mentioned in passing to a colleague of mine, I was like, "God, it would be nice if we had something that could do this for us." And, then I jokingly was like, "Well, if it's not out there, we should create it." And at that point, I think I said, "Oh, and we'll make a lot of money off of it," or something like that. But yeah, so then the idea just kind of stuck around and wouldn't leave my head for like 3 months. And I was finally like, "All right, let me just check out what would need to be done here." And after that, it was about a year of waking up at 4 a.m. so that I could go down into my basement and code. And that energized me, and you feel like, oh, you're doing more of the thing that's burning you out. Like, it makes no sense. Why should that help you? But I just find that if you're doing it in the context of something that maybe you care a little bit more about, not that we don't, enjoy our work, but sometimes we get tasks or projects that aren't necessarily enthralling, especially when you're working in financial services and health insurance. So doing something that you want to do, something that you can kind of call your own, is really beneficial, I found.
And I think, like, just in hearing you speak, I'm thinking about, like, clients where maybe we worked, I don't know, some crazy hours. We had some crazy hours, like, during COVID, helping healthcare clients and nonprofit clients. But it didn't always feel like I was working myself to the grind. And I think there was, I think one time in particular, I was helping build out our practice for a one-to-many solution for economic development organizations. And on the weekends, I would like work on all the things that I didn't necessarily like have the focus to do during the week. But then I would trade that out with, like, maybe Friday I would leave earlier, or like Thursday I might take a longer lunch. So, like, ultimately there was, I don't want to say balance, but I felt like there was a good ebb and flow. And I've felt that before where it's like you're taking your skills and you're using it on something that's like maybe not as exciting, and you can feel a little like, ugh, this doesn't feel so good. Like, maybe it's not full on burnout, but like you're heading in that direction, right? But then, like, taking that same skill set or like pulling apart the pieces of your skill set that really energize you, I think that's one thing like I've learned about is like I can be really good at something, but that might be because I forced myself to. Maybe it doesn't come naturally, or maybe it doesn't energize me. So I'm loving this concept of like what drains us can help fill our cup. and thinking about what part of our, I mean, what part of our work life that we get paid for do like actually really energizes us. And then either putting that to good or monetizing that. I don't know, you've got my head noodling.
Yeah, it's just I feel like it's really important to like, and you know, I have an engineer that works with me here at Cenogenics, and he was almost every night putting in extra hours, but he was and he was working on like work-related things. And I actually had a conversation with him. I'm like, is there something outside of like work stuff that you wish you were doing, like a passion project or something like that? And you know, he's like, oh yeah, like I have an idea about this and this and that. And I told him, I was like, it obviously helps me as your manager at Cenogenics that you work 60-hour weeks on stuff that relates to Cenogenics because we're churning out more. But I don't want you doing that anymore. I want you working on, you know, this personal project that you know, just described to me, because, you know, I was worried. I was like, I don't want it to be a situation where you feel like you can't even work a 20-hour week in 2 months because you've just been burning the candle at both ends and you're just completely burnt out. And so, you know, I basically told him, I was like, the other reason why is it looks really good on a resume if you have a personal project. So, you know, I was just like, start thinking about yourself a little bit more than you're thinking about me or thinking about, you know, the company that you work for. And yeah. So, you know, I
Oh.
was in a weird like manager spot where I was like, this benefits me, but I need you to stop.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's, I mean, first, like, I just need to pause and acknowledge you for looking at the bigger picture and for looking at the bigger person. And I think for having the courage to like follow what feels of integrity with your relationship with like your direct report, as I don't see that nearly often enough.
Yeah, I basically have the mentality of like at work, you're never going to be done. There's always going to be the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So like if you just continue to keep like trying to strive to be done, you're just going to end up, you know, it's just not going to work out because it just doesn't happen. So, you know, I was trying to, because I've done it, you know, and I in my past experience, I have absolutely been that person who, you know, put in 60-hour weeks, and I want to help people from my life experiences who I see kind of going down a similar path, and kind of just let them know, like, I have experienced burnout. I have run into this situation where I went, you know, six months to a year of working 60-hour weeks, and then for 3 months I was absolutely worthless. I didn't do anything. Like I would log on to work and I would try and sit down and do a task, and it would just your mind just wanders and you just can't force yourself to focus anymore. And you know, I just basically I was like, listen, this is something that I know you're in it right now. You're in the grind, and especially he was the more junior engineer on the team, so he was learning a lot of things at that point in time too, and that's when it's like really exciting and like you just feel like you can just keep going forever and ever. I'm like, but the issue is that you're just going to end up in a situation where once you know it and you're just doing it over and over again, like you're just gonna, you know, fizzle out.
Yeah, we don't have infinite energy. I think we forget that, especially how, like what you're saying when you were a little younger and like more, you know, a little like more green really resonated with me because I felt like I had to pay my dues and I felt like I, you know, like doing the contract of the job like wasn't enough. Like I felt like I had to go up and above and then some, right? And that's something that I try to instill in like my peers and my friends and my mentees and even my clients of like, we have a contractual agreement with our employer, right? Like, we're exchanging services in exchange for compensation and other types of benefits. We're not signing our lives over, right? We're not signing our loyalty over. We're not saying like you get to take priority over everything in my life. But somehow we find ourselves in these situations where either like our management has that mindset. I've personally found myself in situations where management's actually really supportive of people, but I put the pressure on myself. I've actually been very fortunate to work for two, I guess three now, consulting firms that have been very supportive of mental health, very supportive of like working your 40, sometimes 45 hours a week. Like, we know it ebbs and flows in consulting, but for all intents and purposes, for the consulting world, like, I've been very fortunate with the companies that I've, been employed at. But yet, like, I still found myself burnt out. I still found myself in this situation where I was heavily dissatisfied. And looking back, it's like, oh, well, that's because I put the pressure on myself. And I even had a manager like you who was like, April, you keep going for the next thing, like, and then you'll keep going for the next thing. It will never be enough for you. Like, you need to find another way to like fulfill yourself than like titles and accomplishments and all these things, right? And anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. But I just I can get on my soapbox about like, I think especially now with all of our layoffs, I'm like, I really like everybody wake up. And I know saying that sometimes I'm like, oh dang, like I'm gonna put a target on my back. But happier employees lead to happier customers. And so it's like, this isn't just good for us as an employee. Like, this is, I think, helpful rhetoric. I don't know if rhetoric is like the right word, but like helpful, like philosophical thoughts, for business itself, right? Because if we're, anyway, I feel like I'm like talking at you now with all my passionate ideas.
No, you're absolutely right on the money. And like I said, especially in the lining it up to the consulting world, you may be really, really motivated for that project for client A, and you guys might turn it around, even quicker than, expectations provide. But then, if you do experience that burnout and you have, like I had, that 3 months of just productivity is down the toilet, maybe it's a different client that you just acquired. And you're in a situation where you're now under delivering for client B. So, obviously it sounds like you've been in a scenario lucky enough to, be with the same client for a while, just based on podcasts that I've listened to. But that is a very real scenario, that you could run into a situation where you may have over-delivered for this client and then you're under delivering for another client because you over-delivered for client A.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Because I didn't always like, I haven't always worked where I've just had like one long-term client. I think the first several years had anywhere from like 5 to 12 clients. And it is such a good point, right? Like, if we're overgiving in one scenario and we don't have an infinite amount of like energy to give, then logically it would make sense that we're under giving in some other way. And then you have to factor in like client personalities and your own person, like your own preferences, and then your actual team's preferences, and it can get to be like perfect storm is such a cliche word, but I love it. Like a perfect storm. Okay. So with that, this is like the perfect segue, I think. because I know we were talking about like earlier before we hit record of some of the ways like we can maybe not help burnout, but like maybe mitigate it is with becoming more effective. I'm always hesitant to be like, let's just be efficient for efficiency's sake. Because I also think that can be like a dangerous road. But like being more effective, learning the tools, using the tools that are out there. And I'd love to hear, like, with the flow analyzer that you created, how does that, like, what does that look like tangibly when people, like, do people get time back? Do people, like, what would you say would be like the business value, of something like that?
Yeah, so for the flow analyzer, essentially what it does is there are certain, what are called industry best practices for developing flows. And this app will essentially scan, whichever flows you want it to, and basically search for violations of those best practices. So I mean, I kind of see two main audiences for the app. The first audience being maybe there's an admin at a nonprofit or a smaller business, and they're trying to set up automations for the company, and they may not feel super competent, in their flow abilities at this current time. So this can be kind of a companion for you to, you create the flow, then you scan it and see if like the analyzer is saying, hey, you should take a look at this. There's documents that I put together as far as certain ways to, approach things as far as best practices, like how do you avoid querying inside of a loop, or things like that. So those documents are linked as well. The second audience, and I think that this is kind of the probably bigger time saver and business value, is doing it with like code reviews. So for instance, a lot of companies will have static code analysis tools like PMD or something of that nature, where they'll have, the person who wrote the code scan it, or they'll scan it and it searches all the nooks and crannies. Because, especially in the consulting world, you more often than not, these tech leads are probably spread across a half dozen projects at a time. So having an app that will search those nooks and crannies for you and kind of surface any red flags, can be super useful. Because I mean, I for one can say that having done code reviews on flows, I've missed stuff because I just didn't check everything. And it's time consuming, especially with a large flow. Like it can just take forever because, there might be something hiding in there that you just never would have thought to check for. Well, the app is built to do those checks for you.
Oh, I love that. It
And
is
kind of
such a
the
time
second
saver. It's like you
piece,
can spend
yeah.
your time on resolving whatever issue arises.
Yeah, the second, and actually that is a perfect segue too, because the second piece of the app that I'm kind of building out now is, okay, now that the app has surfaced violations, can the app help me remedy those? So I came out in the last release with the app can remove unused variables in a flow. So if there's a variable that's out there and it's just not being used anywhere, you click a button and they're all gone. This
Wow,
next
oh
this
my
next
gosh.
upcoming release, I'm introducing two more feature capabilities for that, as far as you can now update API versions of flows. So if they're really old and, say they're on a really old Salesforce API version, you can update those in mass. And the one that I'm really excited about and I keep posting about, and everybody's probably tired of hearing about it, is replacing hard-coded IDs. So the app can go through, and if it identifies certain hard-coded IDs, like record type IDs, user IDs, it can actually programmatically replace them with, something that meets industry best practices. So That's coming up in the
Wow.
1.5 release, and yeah, that one took forever to develop. And you know, it was really cool because the first successful test of it I caught on a live stream. So I do Twitch streaming once a week usually, and like the first full end-to-end successful test that I had, I actually had it on a live stream. So I was like able to like clip it, post it. I was like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened. You guys should all be like super impressed. And yeah, it was just really exciting.
Oh my gosh, that's so fantastic. I love this so much. I love that I'm like giggling and geeking out because I haven't been like hands-on technical in so long. I mean, I never knew how to do code, but like it's been so long, but I'm like, oh, I still think that stuff is cool. Obviously, it's like really valuable for the business, but I'm just giggling at my own reaction of like, oh, that's still really cool. I like that stuff. Well, Alec, I have to ask. I like to ask all the guests, do you have a favorite quote?
Yeah, so you know, there's a reason why the signs on my desk that we were talking about before, the drink coffee, put on some gangster rap and handle it. I listen to a lot of rap music. And you know, one of my favorite quotes is just at the end of a song by Nas, and he says, "Death to the pessimistic mind state." And you know, that always just kind of resonated with me because I'm like, well, you can just banish it away, like just, you know, say the words, and you know, it's like that if you smile for long enough, you'll actually be happy type mentality where, you know, you just say, I'm not going to be upset, I'm not going to be pessimistic. And you mentioned glass half full, you know, that's the way to live life, I think. So my wife is probably going to roll her eyes if she listens to this and hears that I'm quoting Nas in the podcast, but that's all right.
I love that. I love that. Death to the pessimistic mind state. Isn't that on your like your LinkedIn tagline?
It is,
Yeah, I thought I
which,
saw
you know, that's if people ever Google it, they'll probably be like, oh, this guy's a little bit out there.
Hey, I am too, so we're in good company. Where can our listeners learn more about you if they want to get connected?
Yeah, so I'd primarily say LinkedIn. You know, that's where I do kind of the majority of my socials stuff. As I mentioned, I will stream on Twitch hopefully once a week, but with, you know, new baby coming, who knows what that schedule will end up looking like. But you can give me a follow on Twitch. I think we'll include the link in the show notes. But yeah, that's about it. You can check out forceforchangeconsulting.com if you're a nonprofit looking for some help. But yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great to chat with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.